Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Benyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Was it a couple weeks ago when John Mark Carr, who had been absurdly arrested by the Boulder Police Department, by the DA in Boulder, for suspicion of murdering JonBenet Ramsey, had been released, and I said on the show that I would go over our Ramsey case report to give the evidence that leads us to conclude that the parents, JonBenet's parents, John and Patsy Ramsey, were responsible for her death and the cover-up, and that pointing to a possible intruder is irresponsible. Now, when we look at this evidence, we call this the clue that breaks the case. When we look at this evidence, we're taking media reports, and of course you can't execute someone based on media reports. You can't execute someone unless you're a governing official, and if it's someone arrested for suspicion of a crime, you have to have that person convicted of a capital crime. So this is assuming that the information that I'm about to share with you is valid, then this was an inside job and the parents are guilty. Okay. Now, in 1999, our efforts toward justice for JonBenet Ramsey landed reports in USA Today and reports in Denver's Rocky Mountain News, reporting on Fox News Channel, video clips on CBS with Dan Rather, etc. So we made a real effort to get this out. So I now submit to you the clue that breaks the case. Some evidence in the JonBenet Ramsey murder points toward her parents. And other evidence, a little bit of it, seems to clear them. Now, if we can discern the whole truth, it would explain every bit of evidence, because real events produced every bit of the crime scene. Sometimes a single key opens many doors, and one piece pulls the whole puzzle together. JonBenet's murderer inadvertently put the key piece of evidence into the ransom note. On Christmas night, 1996, at 755 15th Street in Boulder, Colorado, in the mansion of her parents, JonBenet was murdered by John and Patsy Ramsey. Her death resulted from a severe blow to the head that fractured her skull across the length of her head, and by strangulation with a cord tightened with a broken stick around her neck. The 6-year-old girl has also been apparently vaginally assaulted prior to her death, according to the autopsy. Now consider the following observations. FBI agents working on the case at the time observed, and this is according to former Boulder investigator Steve Thomas, FBI agents working on the case observed that sex offenders never leave ransom notes nor ask for money. They don't do that. And kidnappers for profit, people trying to make money out of a kidnapping, they do not stop to molest the child in the home, and certainly they never leave behind the victim. Patsy Ramsey called 911 at 5:52 a.m. on December 26th, telling police that her daughter was missing and that she had found a ransom note. 5:52. At 5:55 a.m., neighbors Fleet and Priscilla White are called to the Ramsey home along with other friends. Now, I'm going to read you some excerpts from the ransom note and see if you could spot the clue that breaks the case. "Mr. Ramsey, listen carefully. We are a group of individuals that represent a small foreign faction. We respect your business, but not the country that it serves. At this time..." Could you imagine that? A kidnapper complimenting the company run by the father of the victim. How's that one? Right? The kidnapper is going to compliment the man's business when he's writing a ransom note in the guy's home? It's just inane. John and Patsy Ramsey are the murderers, and they covered this up. And the Boulder DA's office is incompetent. We are a small foreign faction. No one refers to themselves as a small foreign faction. But anyway, we respect your business. How's that one? You know, they're multimillionaires, and they had a lot invested in the success of that company. And oops, we killed our daughter accidentally. You know, people are perverts. They molest their own kids. They kill their kids. And that doesn't mean they want to now be poor and in jail. So they cover it up, and they're going to say that an intruder kidnapped their child because they hated JonBenet and his company? No, that might encourage people in the media to investigate the company and see what's wrong with this company. Why do people hate it so much? So they put a compliment in the ransom note telling the father that his business, they respect his business. You know, murderers are bad problem solvers. Mr. Ramsey, listen carefully. We are a group of individuals that represent a small foreign faction. We respect your business, but not the country that it serves. At this time, we have your daughter in our possession. She is safe and unharmed, and if you want her to see 1997, you will withdraw $118,000. I will call you between 8 and 10 a.m. tomorrow. Remember that time, okay? Between 8 and 10 a.m., remember that, to instruct you on delivery. The delivery will be exhausting, so I advise you to be rested. Now, at this time, they're writing this ransom note when? 1:30 in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning? The parents are snoozing so much in the other room, they could do anything they want in the home, and the parents are not going to wake up. And they're telling them to be well rested? What? They're sound asleep, supposedly. What does he think? They're going to wake up at 7 in the morning and go back to bed? I advise you to be rested. That's the clue that breaks the case. More on that in a moment. If we monitor you getting the money early, we might call you early to arrange an earlier delivery of the money and hence an earlier pickup of your daughter. You see, they wrote this, I advise you to be rested, and if we monitor you out early, the reason they wrote that is because after they killed their daughter and trying to cover up the crime, they realized that John would have to leave the house and come back in as they continue to cover up the crime and the crime scene. And so they were afraid of being seen by neighbors or who knows who. And so they put in the ransom note, they basically gave themselves an excuse of why they would be in bed after, if they had learned that their daughter was dead earlier. Like if someone saw John Ramsey driving around or leaving his driveway at 4 in the morning, and then they wake up at 6 and call the police, then the police say, why did you leave your house at 4 in the morning? And he's stuck. Their whole lie unravels. He had to leave to work to cover up the crime scene. So the lie unravels unless in the ransom note it says, look, you could leave early to pick up the money, or you got to be well rested. So even if you go out to look for her, when you come back home, go to bed and go to sleep. That's how they tried to cover up that part of their finessing of the crime scene in the ransom note itself. Let's continue. All right. If we monitor you getting the money early, we might call you early to arrange an early delivery of the money and hence an earlier pickup of your daughter. Any deviation of my instructions, it's not written well, but will result in the immediate execution of your daughter. You can try to deceive us, but be warned, we are familiar with law enforcement countermeasures. Don't try to grow a brain, John. Now, this was written by Patsy Ramsey while John was out doing what he had to do to attempt to change the crime scene. Don't try to grow a brain, John. Don't underestimate us, John. Use that good Southern common sense of yours. It's up to you now, John. Victory, SBTC. Okay. So notice they don't use the daughter's name, JonBenet. Her name is not in the ransom note. You use somebody's name to pull at their emotional heartstrings. Don't you ever want to see JonBenet again? That's what an intruder would write. That's what a kidnapper would write. But they couldn't get themselves to write her daughter's name. She's just a she. They just refer to her as she. The note's time element indicates it was composed around midnight. At this time, we have your daughter. I will call you by 10 a.m. tomorrow. That means it's written late at night, around midnight. Now, consider the phrase, I advise you to be rested. A kidnapper would not normally give such advice to his victims. No one urges sleeping people to get rest. Right? They're fast asleep. They're going to wake up in the morning, and he's going to say what? Go back to bed immediately? The ransom note refers to JonBenet 14 times. 14 times. Like if you want her to see 1997, but never mentioning her name. 14 times as daughter or with the pronoun she, her. It's an abnormally long note for a ransom note. It demands a relatively small amount, exactly equal to Mr. Ramsey's annual bonus, perhaps put in, perhaps made that way to try to throw the suspicion to someone who would have known what his bonus was, perhaps. In 1968 to 69, the Navy stationed John Ramsey at Subic Bay Training Center, SBTC. So those initials, when she's just going to make up something, that could have been in the back of Patsy Ramsey's mind, just making up some bogus initials of a phony group. Detectives found a draft of the ransom note in the home. In other words, whoever wrote the note, they started writing it, and then they started again. And the legal pad on which the final ransom had been written, along with Ramsey handwriting samples similar to the style on the note, were found in the home. In other words, it looked like Patsy wrote it, and the kidnapper didn't bring the ransom note with him. He thought, well, I'll just find a pen and a pad when I'm in the house, and I'll compose my ransom note while I'm in there, and I'll make it nice and long. A broken window had an obviously disturbed sill, window sill, under which police found a scuff mark, and below that a piece of broken glass on the basement floor. However, police found no footprints outside the window, and it had snowed that night, hours before the murder. So, soft ground, snow. So, the window was broken intentionally, and a scuff mark put on the wall to make it look like somebody went in and out the window. There were no signs of forced entry other than that broken window there. The alarm system had not been activated, so the Ramseys didn't turn on their alarm system. Four people were known to be in the house that night: JonBenet, her 9-year-old brother Burke, and their parents. The Boulder police have no evidence pointing to Burke and have never considered him a suspect. Detective Linda Arndt, the only police officer on the scene in the hours prior to the discovery of the body at 1:05 p.m., she remembers Mr. Ramsey's demeanor when he initially greeted her as not distraught nor even upset, but cordial. Linda Arndt says that the Ramseys did not spend those morning hours in each other's company. That's unusual, no? I mean, that afterward, they seem to have a good relationship. But that Patsy stayed in the sunroom with friends, and John stayed mostly in his den and read his mail in the kitchen. How's that when your daughter's kidnapped? You're not together with your husband and wife? You're reading your mail? When asked that morning who might be responsible for the crime, John gave police the name of an employee, and Patsy gave the name of one of her housekeepers. Now, how's that? So he says, well, I got The ransom note demanded $118,000. Maybe somebody at my company knows I had that much cash on hand. I just got a bonus. All right. Linda Arndt, the Boulder police officer, says that 10 a.m., the ransom note deadline passed unnoticed. She said that the Ramseys did not remark whatsoever regarding the fact that the kidnapper had not called. Now, you would think if somebody has your child and says, I'm going to call by 10 a.m., the only thing on your mind is looking at the clock and waiting, just obsessively waiting for the phone to ring. Not the wife is in one room, the husband's another, the husband's reading his mail, and nobody cares what time it is. Linda Arndt says that she asked the Ramseys and their friends to examine the ransom note for clues, and that almost everyone offered ideas to her, except for Mr. Ramsey. He probably read it and was angry at his wife for being a mental case the way she wrote it, but murderers are bad problem solvers, John. Linda Arndt says that she was confused about why the Ramseys would not speak to her. I mean, she's the first cop on the scene. They didn't want to talk to her. They later refused a formal interview and refused to take polygraph tests. Linda Arndt, yeah, of course, they claim they complied with everything. Linda Arndt suggested Mr. Ramsey search the home. This is hours later, after she arrived. When he and Fleet White came upon the corpse in the basement, Ramsey ripped the duct tape from her mouth and picked up the 47-inch-long, 45-pound body. Now, of course, you would if it's your daughter, but that helps, of course, disturb the evidence. The circuitous route to the wine cellar where the body was found would be very difficult to navigate by a stranger, especially at night, especially with a struggling child, especially when the staircase light switch is not in an expected location on a wall, but above and behind someone entering the stairs. You get that? You don't know the house? You're not going to know how to find the... Who looks above the door behind them, above your head? Linda Arndt saw Mr. Ramsey carrying the body from the basement, JonBenet's unsupported arms extended above her head, and realized that rigor mortis had set in and that she had been dead for some time. Such rigor mortis sets in after about 6 to 12 hours. There was also the scent of decomposition. At 1:30 in the afternoon, a detective overheard John Ramsey talking by phone to his pilot and arranging a trip to Atlanta that evening for himself, his wife, and their son. Is that weird? Is that normal? Your daughter has just been murdered. The police are going to investigate, and you're going to leave the state? Immediately? First thing on your mind? Detective Sergeant Larry Mason told him, "You can't leave." The coroner, Dr. John Meyer, found evidence of sexual assault from the previous night, a small abrasion, and small amounts of blood in both her underwear and vagina. Three medical experts consulting for the police say that the injuries were also consistent with prior sexual abuse. A black light helped reveal that her body had been wiped clean, but that a small residue of blood was left on her thighs. So that's what the kidnapper, the rapist, whatever, came in and did all that, instead of just bringing her body out. You know, it's hard to bring her body out because Denny's got to bury your daughter's body sometime. That could take hours. And he's got to be, it's too difficult. So they report her missing, and maybe nobody will find her in the basement. You know, they're not thinking clearly. John Ramsey says that he had carried a sleeping JonBenet from the car straight to her bed that night. The coroner found something in her stomach, which may represent fragment of pineapple. The party she attended that night had served no pineapple, but police found a bowl of pineapple on the Ramsey's dining room table. Now the coroner said, quote, it may represent fragment of pineapple, unquote. So that implies that he was lying, saying she was asleep when they got home, and that he carried her straight to bed. The murderer draped one of JonBenet's blankets around her body. That blanket held a pubic hair not linked to any family member. Unidentifiable DNA material was beneath her fingernails. An unidentifiable palm print of unknown age was on the wine cellar door. The panties on her body were too large for JonBenet and contained a stain that DNA could not link to any house member. Now, I'll get to this in a more orderly fashion, but John Ramsey left the house that night. He went to either perhaps just an all-night gas station or convenience store, or maybe even worse, he went to a strip joint that was open late. And he took the underwear, he grabbed a pubic hair from in the bathroom, and he just took the underwear and smeared something on it. Maybe he went to an all-night porn shop in the bathroom. And so he brought the underwear back and the pubic hair, put the pubic hair on the blanket, and he put the oversized underwear on his daughter. Now that underwear, upon viewing the body, Patsy exclaimed that she had never before seen the underwear on her daughter's corpse. She said, look at that underwear. Look, that's not my daughter's. Detectives later found out that Patsy, after going through hundreds of receipts, tracking them down, Patsy had recently purchased that very pair of underwear at Bloomingdale's in New York City for her 12-year-old niece. But according to friends of the family who heard the story, JonBenet begged to have that underwear for herself. So Patsy gave in, apparently a spoiled child, and said, okay, we'll save it for you in your closet till you're bigger. So Patsy Ramsey says, where's that underwear from? We don't know. Whose is that? That doesn't belong to us. She knew very well what underwear that was. It was fancy underwear, the kind you'd give for a Christmas present to your niece. Friends of the family knew about the underwear story prior to the murder. If Patsy did recognize the distinctive underwear and was lying, then she was trying to point the police to exculpatory evidence that it was an intruder, although she knew she had planted this evidence. And that's why I say that John Ramsey took that underwear out of the house that night. That's why he put in the ransom note, I advise you to be well rested. And if you go out early to try to get the money, then I'll give you your daughter early. Because they realized they had to make the crime scene look like somebody else did it. So to do that, he had to leave the house. But then if someone saw him driving in or out of his home at 4 a.m, and then they wake up at 6 and call 911, and say, we just woke up, our daughter's missing. And the neighbor said, well, wait a minute. You drove out of your house at 4 a.m. He needed an excuse, one, why he may have left. And if no one saw that, or if someone did see him out, and then they come back home and he goes to bed, why would you go to bed if you know your daughter's been kidnapped? Well, officer, we had to. It said, I advise you to be well rested. So we went to bed. We had to do everything they said. Now, we're going to run out of time in the first half of Bob and Yurt Live, this program, the Denver portion of the show. I will continue this in the second half, which airs in Iowa on KFFF, the Faith and Freedom Network. And you could listen to the whole thing online at kgov.com. By the way, thanks to yesterday's wonderful help from our listeners, we're now at 36% of our goal on our telethon. So yesterday was a great jump. Our phone number, if you want to make a pledge, 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278, 800-836-9278, or online at kgov, kgov.com. Okay, I'll do a little more until we run out of time. So she knew exactly where the underwear came from. She had planted it with her husband, the exculpatory evidence. Officer Barry Harkop interviewed next-door neighbors and reported that Scott Gibbons saw strange lights and movements coming from the kitchen area around midnight. And neighbor Melody Stanton awoke her husband around midnight after hearing a scream, and he stated he heard, quote, the sound of metal clashing against cement, unquote. The Ramseys say they heard none of this. Police found a Ramsey family flashlight on the kitchen counter, which was not normally kept on that counter, but nearby. On December 27th, Patsy Ramsey, being exhausted and lying down, reached up and touched the face of a friend, Pam Griffin, the woman who had made JonBenet's pageant costumes. Griffin thought Patsy was delirious when she asked, couldn't you fix this for me? As though a sewing machine could bring back her daughter. She then remembers Patsy saying, we didn't mean for this to happen. And Griffin got the definite feeling that in her weakened condition, Patsy had revealed that she knew who the killer was. Regarding the ransom note, on March 5th, 1997, police and handwriting experts clear John Ramsey and Burke, the brother, as writers. The investigators believe Patsy probably wrote the note, and on April 14th, 1997, they request from her a fifth handwriting sample. Now, we are out of time in Denver, but like I said, if you'd like to hear the rest of this, you can go to kgov.com, or you can read it. We have our Ramsey case report online at shadowgov.com, shadowgov.com. Hey, the Colorado Right to Life Annual Banquet is coming up September 30th. If you'd like to go, it's $50 a head in the Denver Tech Center at the Doubletree Hotel, and you can call board member Susan Sutherland at 303-254-6566. If you'd like to sit at my table, I believe we still have three seats available. We've sold six tables for the banquet, and this is the last table. We made it my table, so you could call us at 1-800-836-9278. That's 800-836-9278. The second half of the show will be airing in Iowa. Iowans, call us for the telethon if you'd like to help out. 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. We'll be back right after this.
At Bob Inyart Live and KGov.com, you'll find literature, audio, and video products that are a must for the library of any Christian interested in studying the truth of the Bible. You'll find essential material like the plot manuscript, an overview of the whole Bible that will clear up doctrinal issues. Then there's The Tree, a fun audio journey back to the Garden of Eden, where you'll learn about this most famous tree and its impact on humanity. Check out the Mount Moriah video. This video gives evidence for the resurrection, combining biblical and secular resources. It's a great witnessing tool. And don't forget the death penalty video. Learn that Jesus advocated the death penalty and learn how God put the death penalty at the heart of the gospel. You can directly help Bob's outreach by subscribing to Best of Bob, Bob's Best 8 Shows of the Month, or build a Bible study library by ordering the monthly Bible albums. There's a lot more, so give us a call at 1-800-8-INYARD. That's 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278 or kgov.com.
This is Bob Inyart inviting you to read our manuscript, The Plot, for an overview of the whole Bible. Call us at 800-836-9278. That's 836-9278. The clue that breaks the case, JonBenet Ramsey's murder was an inside job, and the evidence that John and Patsy were responsible and covered up the crime is overwhelming, but our criminal justice system is broken. O.J. Simpson leaves behind a mountain of evidence, and he gets acquitted, which is utterly devastating. when there is no justice in the courts by the government, the government is supposed to be God's minister for good. But when the government is immoral, when it doesn't know right from wrong, when it's broken, then people begin to deny, they increasingly deny that a God of justice exists. So when justice is obvious, then people will be more inclined to believe in a God of justice. In fact, the book of Hebrews tells us that by the testimony of two or three witnesses, then a criminal is put to death. And that points people to the greater reality of the second death and judgment day in front of God. All right, so we're going through the evidence that JonBenet's murder was an inside job and the parents were involved and did the cover-up. And now we're up to the Ramseys often resisting cooperating with the ongoing investigation, as, for example, on February 19th, 1997, so this is a month and a half after the murder, when they refused to allow police to interview John's oldest son, John Andrew. A known feud developed early on between the detectives and the district attorney at that time, Alex Hunter. Now, the DA's office in Boulder was bad. It's gotten worse. Accusations of conflict of interest suggest that the reason for Hunter's frequent conflict with detectives and sheltering the Ramseys. On January 16, 1998, the Ramseys refused a police request for a second interview, but on June 25, 1998, they allowed Hunter's office to question them. So that's what they will claim. They cooperated completely. They don't want to talk to the police. They don't want to talk to the detectives, but they'll talk to the Boulder DA's office because it's obviously incompetent. Linda Wilcox, a housekeeper, described the Ramseys upon finding a flood in their home, Patsy panicking, and John as controlled but furious, so filled with rage that his eyes almost changed color. That's what she said. That's pretty wild. The duct tape roll and any remainder of the cord used to kill JonBenet and wrap her up, the remainder of the cord and the roll of the duct tape were never found in the Ramsey mansion. How could that be? If she was duct taped, where's the rest of the roll? Well, that's one of the things that John Ramsey disposed of when he left the house. That's why it was important for him to write the ransom note in such a way as to give him an excuse either to leave early because he's looking for his daughter desperately, and then he comes home and goes to bed. Why are you in bed? Why are you and Patsy in bed and wake up at 6 in the morning and call 911 if you're out during the night? Oh, because the ransom note told us we had to be well rested. Why are you out at 4 in the morning? Well, either I'm looking for my daughter or I was trying to figure out how to get the ransom money. You see, they put their alibi for that behavior in the ransom note to cover themselves in case they had been caught out of the house that night. A footprint 1 foot from the body made in concrete dust was made from a high-tech brand boot, okay? They have boots called high-tech, high, H-I-G-H-T-E-C. So it was that kind of boot, but it could not be linked to any shoe in the house. A 4.5-inch stick used in the ligature strangulation came from one of Mrs. Ramsey's paintbrushes found among her art supplies in the basement. So how's that? The stick used to strangle JonBenet was from a paintbrush of Patsy's. They know that for certain. 4 fibers on the duct tape have been linked to the red and black jacket. Now check this out. fibers on the duct tape used to tape JonBenet Ramsey up. Fibers on the duct tape have been linked to the red and black jacket that Patsy wore the night before. How's that? When Patsy greeted officers at 6 a.m., she was wearing the same jacket she had just worn to the Christmas party. How often does that happen? You go to a party, Christmas party at night, come home late at night, next morning you put on the same jacket? What's with that? Patsy maintains that she dressed that morning prior to finding out that JonBenet was missing. And she put on the jacket she wore to the Christmas party. Right. Prosecutors often, and how did the fibers from that jacket get on the duct tape used to tape up JonBenet? Prosecutors often fail to convict parents who murder a child because most people cannot even imagine committing such a crime themselves. Sadly, however, Susan Smith drowned her two young boys, just as thousands of parents have murdered their own children. It happens. And countless fathers have molested their daughters. Such brutality does happen, and society's mindset disregarding such behavior results in more victims. As a six-year-old beauty queen, JonBenet was publicly sexualized by her parents, dressed provocatively, and coached to saunter like a seductress at 6 years old. If the Ramseys murdered their daughter, possible motives include parents blaming their daughter for their own sexual abuse of her, jealousy of the mother toward the daughter, sexual incident getting further out of hand than planned, as when people almost asphyxiate somebody during a sexual perversion, outburst of wrath after sexual assault unintentionally breaks the child's skull. The actual murder and kidnap scheme came about to cover up the initial crimes. Okay, it wasn't their intention that night to murder their daughter, but it happened. Much of the ransom note is inconceivable from the perspective of an intruder, such as the compliment of respect, the word respect, paid to John Ramsey's business. How's that? How many kidnappers stop to say, I want you to know I respect your company. I respect the company that you run, but I don't like your government. So I'm kidnapping your daughter, but I just want to make it clear that I do respect your company. Come on. They could have videotaped themselves with the murder and given it to the Boulder DA, and they would have never been arrested. That's how incompetent they are. So the clue that breaks the case wide open is the phrase, I advise you to be rested. No theory of an intruder can explain that phrase, nor much of the evidence that we've been citing against the Ramseys. But this key phrase explains all of the evidence, both the damning evidence and the exculpatory. And it shouts that the parents murdered their daughter and then worked to throw the police off the trail. On that Christmas night, after Patsy put her son to bed, John began to sexually abuse his daughter. One form of destructive behavior led to another, and at midnight, in a burst of anger and emotion, Patsy struck her daughter in the head, cracking her skull. They realized the severity of the wound and that JonBenet was near dead. Neither wanted to be caught, so they began to conceal their crimes. First, they strangle her, which both gets rid of her and makes what would have been an accidental death appear to be deliberate. Then they planned to dispose of any damning evidence, but realized that without evidence pointing to someone else, they would be the only suspects. So if they were to survive, the resourceful Ramses would have to rework the crime scene to point to an intruder. They decide to write a ransom note, which John began dictating to Patsy. As they wrote the note, they made mental notes about what evidence they must dispose of and what evidence they could gather and plant to divert attention. Their note had to take into account that it might take them hours to rework the crime scene. The neighbors may have already noticed the commotion and might watch the house or even call 911. John needed to leave the house to dispose of the roll of duct tape, the spool of cord, etc. Neighbors may then notice them stirring in the house, or they might even see John driving away or returning way past midnight. Even though they risked being seen, they were not ready to dump their best alibi. They needed to tell the police that they were asleep all night and that they heard nothing. Their desperation to avert justice demanded that they try that alibi. So they planned to, quote, wake up. They were awake all night, but they planned to wake up at 6 a.m. and call the police. However, a neighbor or even a police patrol might have seen John Ramsey up at 3 a.m., leaving his driveway or coming back. Their wording in the ransom note guarded against that risk. If that worst-case scenario happened to them, then Patsy could admit, yes, we found the note last night. We were afraid to call the police because of the death threat. John rushed out in desperation to find JonBenet, and I searched the house. Then when John returned without her, we reread the note and realized that we had better get to bed to get the rest we needed for the next day. When we woke up, we realized that we needed help, so we decided to call 911. But we thought it better not to mention that we had been up desperately looking for her last night. That was their alibi in case they were caught. With that pretext, they went to work. John found a pair of unused shoes and made a footprint next to the body. He then took those shoes, the oversized underpants, and other damning evidence with him, like the rest of the roll of duct tape and the rest of the cord used to strangle her. He took that with him as he left the house, perhaps around 1:30 a.m. He went out to find a public restroom at a nightclub, a gas station, a diner, or preferably even a strip joint or an adult bookstore with video stalls. Somewhere along his journey, he dropped the damning evidence in the trash. At the restroom, he used the panties that Patsy had recently purchased to pick up a pubic hair and then rubbed a stain onto the underpants. Meanwhile, Patsy decided to rewrite the ransom note, and she authored the final personal contradictory lines, "Don't try to grow a brain, John. Use that good Southern common sense of yours. It's up to you now, John." Patsy then saw the broken ends of the paintbrush that John had overlooked, and she hid them among her art supplies. Later, Mr. Ramsey returned to the house, planted the lone pubic hair on the blanket, put the stained underwear on the body, and broke the basement window and disturbed the sill, which he later pointed out to Fleet White. The unidentifiable DNA material under the fingernails was likewise collected by John or by a few days of Normal's child play. That material did not come from an intruder, which would have suggested that JonBenet fought and struggled, getting the attention of her neighbors but not her parents. To help explain to the police how they could have slept through the attack, Patsy Ramsey had taped their daughter's mouth shut. Some may think, and that's how she got the fibers from her red and black party jacket onto the duct tape. Some may think this plan is too involved for the Ramseys to pull off. However, John had built a successful defense contracting business, and Patsy had long ago managed to become Miss West Virginia. They're pretty sharp, huh? Now, they're slick people. They're not stupid. It's not like they have a low IQ. When the ransom note is written and the criticism is against your government but not John Ramsey's company, which he respects, this supposed intruder respects John Ramsey's company. John Ramsey ran a defense contracting business. People who hate America's government hate defense contractors. They don't love Martin Marietta or Boeing and hate the government. If they hate the government, they hate everything to do with our military, including our defense contractors. It's just so inane and so obvious. Further, they had help, John and Patsy. There's an author of a book, John Douglas, and he's a FBI criminal profiler. And he wrote a book called Mind Hunter, which reads in part like the JonBenet Ramsey case, in the use of duct tape, ligatures for strangulation, and similar phrases that are in the ransom note. Now, that book, Mind Hunter, by John Douglas, investigators found that hardback book in the Ramsey bedroom. So John Ramsey's reading this book, and this unexpected evil nightmare event happens, so he has these ideas in his head. Okay, here's how we cover up the crime. After rechecking the crime scene, the Ramseys went to bed to rehearse their story. Neither slept that night, neglecting their own advice. That's what happened in the JonBenet Ramsey murder and cover-up. It was not an intruder. It was an inside job. And so it was Steve Thomas, who's a former Boulder detective, who appeared on CNN just earlier this month, and he was pointing out how absurd the claim is that it was an intruder, and how the current DA in Boulder is putting the nail in the coffin of ever solving this case by arresting someone on virtually no evidence at all, an absurd, irresponsible arrest, giving credence to the intruder theory and helping John Ramsey tremendously, implying that there's good suspicion among Boulder detectives that it was an intruder. It wasn't an intruder. The evidence that I've shared with you today, as best we can tell, this evidence is reliable. At shadowgov.com, we give the names of the detectives, the police officers, the relatives, the neighbors, the housekeeper, who have been reported as making very specific claims. The detectives went through, I said hundreds, I think they said over 1,000 receipts. Slow and tedious work to try to solve the crime. And they come across the receipt from Bloomingdale's in New York City that Patsy Ramsey used to buy the underwear that JonBenet was wearing when she was dead. And Patsy Ramsey calls attention to the underwear and says, where did that come from? That doesn't belong to my daughter. Who put those on her? And now Patsy Ramsey is dead. She died. So she got away with the crime? No, only a fool would think that. Because when she died, that was her day in court. That's when she found out that the gig was up and that everyone now knew that she was the murderer, that is, everyone involved in trying her, because judgment day is coming. She is being held right now. She's being held until judgment day, and then she will be called forth. And the evidence against her will be described to the court. And you know who the judges will be? Who will the judges be on Judgment Day? A lot of Christians think that the judges on Judgment Day will be just God. But the Father, the Son, who? You know who will be the judges? We will be the judges. If you're a Christian, you will be the judge on Judgment Day. That's what God says over and over in the Bible. The Apostle Paul to the Corinthians says, hey, you guys, I'm ashamed of you because you're not judging. Do you not know that we will judge the angels? Do you not know that we shall judge the world? Yeah, we believers. The Bible says that God commits judgment into the hands of the saints in the book of Revelation. We read in Proverbs that a husband whose neighbor has seduced his wife, that husband will not forgive on Judgment Day. He will not forgive. He will throw the book at that adulterer, unless, of course, that criminal, that sinner, has repented. And repentance, sorrow, that makes all the difference in the world. When someone is sorry, when they're truly sorry, it makes all the difference in the world. And John and Patsy Ramsey, they write a book. You remember the title of their book? And do you remember the cover of the book? You remember who published it? Major Christian publisher. Thomas Nelson, major Christian publisher, published the murderer's book. And the title of the book was Death of Innocence. And you know what the cover of the book was? The picture? What would it be? You write a book about your daughter's death? It'd be her picture, Death of Innocence. That wasn't the book. It was their picture. John and Patsy Ramsey put their own picture on the cover of the book and titled it Death of Innocence. In other words, they're the real victims. They're the real victims. None of it adds up as an intruder. It was not an intruder. Now, here at Bob and Yurt Live, we do our best to crystallize the important stories that we report on. We had a listener from Colorado call in, and he said, you know, I've heard on KHOW for years Peter Boyles talk about this Ramsey case, and all he really does is whine about it, joke about it, complain about it. He said, I listen to you. You're so clear. You put it all together. You give the evidence. And that's what a talk show should do if they're responsible. Hey, we could really use your help to stay on the air, not only for criminal justice cases, but biblical justice. And how should we as Christians encourage our government and our society to function? That's what Bob and Yurt Live is all about. We could use your help to stay on the air. Our telethon, we're at 36% of our $15,000 goal to keep us on the internet for another year at kgov.com. So please call us if you can help, 1-800-8-N-YURT. That's 1-800-836-9278, 836-9278, or you could help us out by going to our website, kgov.com. God bless you. This is Bob and Yurt reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.